It's time for Plain Living for Alabama and the Gulf Coast. With nationally recognized nature writer and award-winning horticulture and nature expert, Bill Finch. Bill shares his knowledge of conservation, natural history, and gardening. Let's talk about living and growing in the Deep South with your personal garden and nature consultant. Here's Bill Finch on FM Talk 106.5.
Hey, welcome back. Gulf Coast Sunday morning, Alabama Sunday morning. Two stories have gotten my attention this week when it comes to how we cultivate the native landscape. And it's an interesting thing. We at the research center where I am, we have a forest that is very old. When the tornado knocked down a bunch of trees, about 200 acres of trees at least, we started looking at some of the age of some of the hickories that were there, and gosh, amazing. They had been there probably 200, 250 years. I was really quite surprised at their age. On some of those slopes where those trees were knocked down. And persimmons, too. Really old, massive persimmons that are really neat. Lots of nut trees, lots of fruit trees. And one of the interesting things we're finding is every time we find these old trees, we think, did humans have a role in putting these trees here? Or at least in selecting what trees are here? And it's quite possible that some of the large fruited persimmons we're seeing in some places in Alabama may be the result of human cultivation hundreds of years ago. Maybe even thousands of years ago. Isn't that interesting? We don't think about that. But we've been fiddling with the landscape for a long time. And there's some things we learned in that fiddling. We learned how to do things well and how not to do things. We experimented a lot. Probably more experimentation went on about how to cultivate the landscape before Columbus came and brought his stock of ideas with him, and all the ideas that we import and that have influenced strongly how we see, how we build gardens. Because, you know, basically we build gardens like we're living in France. We build gardens like we're living in northern Germany. Like we're living in England. Not like we're living in a place like the Southeast. And it's all because we haven't gotten over this idea that we had to borrow everything from Europe. Not that Europe's a bad place. It's just that European ideas probably often work better in Europe when it comes to gardening than they do here. We can learn some. But what's interesting is in these two articles, this great experimentation is really obvious. This great experimentation from before the time that Columbus came. Avocados. What surprised me is that avocados, there's great evidence that avocados have been cultivated for the better part of 10,000 years. And that's really important because it says something about how long people have been here meddling with the forest. And they've been adapting avocados from wild plants into the plants that we know now and cultivate. What was also interesting about that avocado article was that it was evident that we had interfered in some probably inappropriate ways. And avocados were nearly wiped out because the creatures that move them around, the elephants that were part of our world when people came to Alabama, the gomphotheres, which are really cool looking elephants, you gotta say. I mean, a gomphothere is one cool looking elephant. Boy, do I miss those gomphotheres. But they were moving these fruits around. And without the elephants and the sloths and the toxodons and the other really cool-looking animals that were moving these fruits around, they became very restricted and were almost lost. Because when we wiped out the animals, which we did, face it, when we wiped out the elephants, we wiped out all of the communities that depended on them. And so people scrambled about 10,000 years ago, figured out what to do with these avocados, saved them, and probably in a real sense, from extinction. Probably did the same with cycium, vulgari, the thing we call melaton, and other Central American and Southern U.S. fruits that were moved around by these creatures. We saved some of them, probably by accident, probably just by the hair of our chinny chin chins, just barely from extinction, and were able to cultivate them and improve them. It's an interesting story. I'm not sure what the lessons are, except that we've interfered in this landscape a lot. And sometimes we interfere in ways that preserve species, and sometimes we don't. But it does tell me that, boy, we need to think about where we are. We need to think about how we got here. Another interesting story. And that's up in the upper end of North America. I guess it's probably up around Detroit, somewhere way up there. Wisconsin, I can't remember. Wisconsin it was. Where it was clear that in areas that we now consider not good for cultivation, for the better part of 1,000 years, before Columbus came, tribes, nations had clearly had an extensive agricultural system. And it's so funny, because it's not this sort of bizarre newfangled cultivation that involved plows. It was a cultivation on a large scale that involved gardening beds, much like we build now, much like I encourage you to build. No, they didn't buy a bunch of metal and put around the beds to hold them up. No, they didn't need to do all that nonsense. No, they didn't build them up 3 feet high. They just raised the bed slightly. They learned something about how to modify that landscape to make it easier for them to grow crops. And it was apparently a pretty efficient system and pretty extensive. And it persisted in the same place they were coming back year after year after year after year after year. Hundreds, centuries, millennia, they kept coming back to these soils. And they kept on doing it. We can't do that now. We wear our soils out. We have to add things to them. They weren't crazy stuff to make them work. And even then they collapsed. But these soils were still persisting. What were they doing? Well, it's one of these great discoveries that we had a lot to learn from people on this continent. We have a lot to learn from this continent still. And in the midst of all of this, America great again, we have forgotten that we have a land and a place that we still barely understand. And making America great again may mean going back to the world before Columbus came and made us all Europeans in one way or another. It's an interesting thought. We're going to be back We're going to be thinking about how you make your garden.
Plain Talk on Plain Living. Let's talk about living and growing in the Deep South with Bill Finch. Call 251-343-0106 on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. Gulf Coast Sunday morning, Alabama Sunday morning. We're thinking about... Sean made me do this the other day. Thinking about what this place was like... And how we've changed it, how it's changed over many, many hundreds of years, thousands of years. You know, Alabama, we've been fiddling in Alabama probably for the better part of 15,000, if not 20,000, if not 25,000 years. Who's we? People. People like us, people very much like us, who have been in Alabama for a long time. And it's important to understand that human relationship and the failures and the successes. Gosh, what a crazy thing not to report your failures. Thank goodness, when I garden, I have an acute awareness of my failures. I keep a record of them in my head. I repeat them to myself. And I probably should do an even better job of keeping them as records. It's not your successes, it's your failures that teach you the most. And so when you decide in history, you're not going to talk about the failures of America, the failures of people, the failures of agriculture, you've made a huge mistake, because they teach you a lot. And as I've often said, I have learned by killing hundreds of thousands of plants. I would not have any success as a gardener if I hadn't killed a few plants, if I hadn't killed a lot of plants. It's one of the ways that we learn. As long as we keep a record of that, and as long as we say, gosh, why did that happen? Let's examine why that happened. Really important from an historical perspective. Just thinking about that. Thinking about looking at this forest as history. Thinking about looking at our lives as history. And understanding why we messed up. Really important thing to do. And there were a lot of screw-ups. You know, I think when people first came to Alabama, one of the first things they did was wipe out this immense and easy source of meat. I don't know that they really thought about how they did it. It took them a while, took them a few thousand years for the population to build up, but they did. And that had huge cascading consequences that we're still living with. There's modern examples of people messing up. I think the great mounds in the middle of the Mobile-Tensaw Delta, which are very impressive and very beautiful and very spooky in their own way, I think they're evidence of people messing up, making a big mistake, getting too big for their britches, not thinking about what were going to be the consequences. We need to study that sometimes. Think about that. So we are thinking about that. But, you know, here's the other thing. There were successes, too, and we've forgotten about them, and we need to resurrect them. And I want to do that this morning in many ways. What were the successes that we've forgotten about on our own continent and our own place, in this place that we think we're going to make it great again, but only if we go back and really understand what's happened here for thousands of years? So Mark wants me to talk about peppers this morning, and I'm going to talk about peppers this morning. Mark is in church, and this is great, and he sent me a message early this morning as I asked him to prompt me, and you can do that too if you have to go to church, and you can listen to us later on a podcast. But we have really missed the boat when it comes to peppers. I do look forward to tomatoes. I look forward to peas. I look forward to beans. I look forward to basil. I look forward to kale. I look forward to collards. I look forward to nasturtiums. All of these things, but boy, do I really look forward to peppers. Because they're one of the most versatile things we've got. And I think they're one of the great introductions. I would say, ultimately, they may prove to be a more important introduction from the Americas, more important even than tomatoes, and beans, and squash. But you can do so many different things with peppers, and not all peppers are hot. Unfortunately, we have let Europe tell us more about peppers, where peppers aren't native, than we hear from our own people who developed peppers on this continent. We don't listen to them, and we should. There are many different types of peppers, and I have to go through this briefly. I'm going to say that a lot of peppers that we grow are Mexican peppers that have been translated to Europe and brought back to us. And they're peppers from the dry, high mountains of Mexico. Many of them actually like hot days, but cool nights. They don't tolerate, they're kind of naive to diseases that occur in wet environments. And then you take them over to Italy and get Italy to pump them up, or send them to New England in the form of bell peppers and get somebody in Cornell to pump them up. And what you end up with is a pepper that's very vulnerable in southern conditions. But Mexico didn't invent peppers. In fact, probably the stronghold of peppers is south of Mexico and Central and South America. And there's some great peppers there that aren't the same type of pepper. They're not in the group of peppers we call annuum peppers. And annuum means annual, which suggests that these Mexican peppers only live a year. That's not quite true. But they do tend to be selected for qualities that make them only good for 1 year. But as you move farther south, there are perennial peppers, and they're really cool. And they're in the Caribbean, and they're widespread in the Caribbean. And we were once a Caribbean city, Mobile was. Too bad we lost that since. And when we did, we lost a lot of the great Caribbean peppers that we could be growing here. Some of those are habanero peppers that are very hot, and we have a very limited sense of those, and there's sort of this athletic competition now to see who can tolerate habanero peppers. It doesn't make any sense to me. You can do whatever you like there. I have no sense in engaging in athletic competitions when it comes to eating peppers. I really want to eat peppers that taste good. They have a little bite, a little nip is okay, or sometimes no nip at all. And there's some great Caribbean peppers that are in that habanero group that we've forgotten about, and you can find them still a lot. There are some on southern exposure. It's actually a group of peppers, that habanero group, that is, for some bizarre reasons, called Chinese peppers, even though they're not from China. They're really from South America, Central America, and they're a great group of peppers, that habanero group. Puerto Rican no burn is one that's gotten to be very famous. There's a lot of aji dulces. Aji is a South American, Central American word, aji, that basically refers to peppers from that part of the world. And dulce, I think that's Portuguese, maybe Spanish. Maybe Italian, I don't know. For sweet, basically sweet, dulcent, dulce. So that's a great group of peppers. And there are a lot of places. There's another group that I want to get to real quickly. The Bacatum group of peppers, B-A-C-C-A-T-U-M. And they're the ones that really gave the name ahi to the world. All of those peppers are ahis, and they're really great. And they have a great flavor, too. And I'm going to talk a little bit more about those, because we've got a lot to learn from those peppers.
Traveling through this world alone, there is no sickness, toil, or danger in that fair land.
Welcome back to Plain Living for Alabama and the Gulf Coast with Bill Finch. Ask Bill about gardening and nature in your backyard. Call 251-343-0106 on FM Talk 106.5.
Yeah, all right, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning. It's an Alabama Sunday morning. Yeah, B-Dark, I'm curious as to which pepper that is. It's looking good. So B-Dark sent me a picture of a pepper. Not a peck of pickled peppers, but a picture of a pepper that she kept going over the winter. And even, as she said, with the snow, it's in a container. And it may have gotten snow in the container, but it's very interesting. A lot of peppers are perennial. And one of the cool things that you can take advantage of on the coast is, particularly on the coast, is that those peppers will come back year after year if you treat them right. And even with a little bit of effort, you can keep some of the South American peppers, the Bacatum peppers, B-A-C-C-A-T-U-M. I don't know. You can call it whatever you want. Bacatum, 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 B-A-C-C-A-T-U-M. The ahi peppers from South America, which are perennial. They really are the great advantage of them. One of the great advantages is they are perennial. You can keep them in a container for years and years. They'll do fine. But there's some great flavors there. I think I prefer their flavors generally, for general purposes, even over the Chinense peppers, which have a very fruity flavor, the habanero flavor. I like those Bacatum peppers. And we found some good ones. And so, Mark, I'm going to get to the point on these. Things like ahi omnicolor, ahi omnicolor. Great little pepper, great little, I just love that. It's got a little bit of a heat. It's got heat. It's got a bite, but it's not athletic bite. It's just, and the one thing I like about ahi omnicolor is it's a beautiful pepper. I mean, you'll have a bush, and it'll have four or five different colors on the bush. It's amazing, ranging from white to purple to orange to red and all kind of pastels in between. And the red is the ripest, and they're really nice to, they're really beautiful that way, but they also have a very, very nice fruity flavor, not overwhelming, but you can taste it, it adds, and they have a bite, a little peck. Oh, and it's a quick peck, it's like something bit your tongue quickly that just sort of let you know it's there, and it goes away. But it's very nice, very pleasant. Gets into your nose. It opens, seems to open up your mouth to other flavors. I don't know why that is, but it's one of the things I think we like about the peppers is that once we get used to that little peck, which gets to be a distraction, suddenly it's like it wakes up your mouth to other flavors. And its ahi omnicolor is great. There's another, but there are other ahis that are very mild, that have no peck at all. And some of them, it's so hard to find the seeds for. I actually am keeping some of those seeds, and I hope I'm able to keep them long enough. Ahi Santa Cruz, if you can find it, has been a great pepper for me. Ahi Santa Cruz. There are several varieties out there. I'm trying to get the right ones, but they can be really cool. They can be really cool. So this is what I'm thinking about. Let me give Mark real quickly, because I told him I would. Look, Southern Exposure has a couple of great peppers right now, several good peppers in that Bacatum and in the Chinensi group. I think they have some Bacatums, but they definitely have some great Chinensi peppers that you can try. Experimental Farm Network, if you haven't ever tried them out, check them out. They do some very interesting things. Experimental Farm Network, you can see them on the internet. And there's some other more obscure pepper groups that are harder to get to that sell seeds. There's a place that sells peppers, and I will admit they are the ones who actually initially helped me to appreciate some of these Bacatums. And that's chilipeppers.com, Cross Country Nurseries, now under new ownership, but they still seem to be doing a great job, have a lot of peppers. And you often don't get the seeds from them, but you can get the plants, and you can begin experimenting with some of those plants. They probably sold out for the year, which is unfortunate, but you should check them out, and you should order peppers from them. And if you order things like the Bacatum peppers, don't worry if they come in late. You'll be fine. But check out that as well. Did you get that one, Mark? Cross Country Nurseries, chilipeppers.com, a really good one. Last year it was a red chili pepper. Yes, but which chili pepper, B-Dark? That's what I'm trying to figure out. It's interesting. It's very interesting. And it will probably be a red chili pepper this year, too, but I can't quite tell which one it is. It was good. There it is. Oh, gosh, we got some callers. Keith, I'm listening. What's up?
Hello?
Keith? Oh, this is Gene.
Yeah.
Gene, how are you? What's up?
I'm flipping on blindside and getting in here early.
Yeah, okay. So tell me what's going on.
Anyway, I had talked to you a couple of months ago. I got a bunch of peace lilies when my wife died, and I'm having some problems with some of them. They wilt down, a couple of them, and the rest of them doing fine. And I don't know exactly what I need to do with the thing. Or do they need more water? Might not be enough dirt there or something. I don't know.
Yeah, it's quite possible that they have exhausted the dirt and that they're growing in very little dirt. I would go ahead and pot those up, and you may be having a hard time keeping them watered because you don't have good dirt. Get some good dirt. Gene, put them in a slightly larger pot than they're in now.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, and get some good dirt from, you know, you'll have to go to Lowdown Depot or wherever, or go to, you know, shoot. Go to A-Bloom. Go to A-Bloom. They've got some great dirt as well. But my point is don't try to manufacture your own dirt. Go ahead and get some good dirt.
Just potting soil,
and they'll do fine in that. And they'll have enough, with all of those products, they'll have enough nitrogen, you won't even have to fertilize them for a while.
Well, that's another question about fertilizing. Do you fertilize them, and what kind of fertilizer do you use?
Yeah, you know, I would say with a potted plant, in general, just remember to use a liquid fertilizer when you're watering. It's the simplest way of doing it, and it's not too expensive, and it doesn't raise a bunch of questions about when that fertilizer becomes available. Just use a liquid fertilizer. Is there a special liquid fertilizer to use? No. Use the plainest old fertilizer you can. If it's Miracle-Gro, that's fine. If it's Peters, that's fine. They're all fine. And they're all now formulated in the right way, so they don't have a lot of phosphorus. You don't want to get a Bloom Buster fertilizer for sure, but just a plain old, I have to say all the things you shouldn't do, but just a plain old liquid fertilizer, like plain old regular old Miracle-Gro or plain old regular Gro, Peters or whoever's selling the liquid fertilizer where you are. They're really fine.
I got some of that liquid fertilizer that's old. They just throw that out.
Probably not, as long as it didn't get wet. Was it a liquid form anyway?
Right.
Yeah, no, it's fine. It'll last for a good long while. And, it should be fine. It probably loses a little bit of its ammonia, but it still seems to work fine even after it's been left out for a year or two. So I think you're fine.
Well, you got me started up last week talking about speckled butter beans. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do know. I do know what you're talking about. So I love butter beans.
That's my favorite butter bean, but you can't find them.
Well, you know, Florida speckled is still out there. Florida speckled's still out there. Christmas Lima is another one that's kind of the same thing. And they're available on the internet from places like Southern Exposure and other places. I would be surprised if they're not still available at some places, at some of the shops in Mobile. I hope they are at some of the old...
Well, with that lady over there, where you always see that, which is a nice nursery right there on the old shell and right there by Home Depot, or Lowe's, rather. And they didn't have any. You know, they got all kind of seeds up, but they didn't have any. So I guess I'm going to have to get one of my boys to come up and put me on line.
Yeah, that's right. So check around.
That's my favorite butter beans. You can plant them now still, right?
Oh, yeah. You can still plant them now. I actually think it's a little better on the Gulf Coast to wait later and plant them because they don't tend to produce in July and August nearly as well as they produce in September, October, and November. And you get past the rain, and so the pods actually do better, and I just find that they do better. You really want them to start producing in September, October, and November.
Oh, really?
And, and maybe Christmas Lima is called Christmas Lima because it still produces up until Christmas on the Gulf Coast.
Well,
I'm going
to plant me some because I love my favorite butter bean. I haven't had any in years. You can't seem to find them. I can't remember that nursery out there. I need to know her name because she's right there on the corner of right by Lowe's. And you come on down that street beside Lowe's and you write that Shell Road, and it's a nice, big nice nursery been there long.
It's A Bloom, isn't it? Is it?
Yeah.
You're talking about A Bloom?
Yeah. A Bloom was where I went. They didn't have any, so I figured they'd have them. But I'll check around town, maybe see if somebody else has got them local. If they hadn't, there's ought to be some offline. Yeah. But you perked me up because that's my favorite butter bean. You can't buy them no more.
Yeah.
I'm talking about you can't buy them in the fruit stands and you're selling them.
Nobody's growing them. It's kind of an interesting thing. I mean, you can't. It's really interesting how the decline of what we're actually growing and what farmers are growing, and that's another story, and we'll talk about that. And it's really interesting that. The Mennonites have sort of resurrected this in some places, and I think somebody ought to put some Christmas Limas in the hands of the Mennonites here and in central Alabama. If you can find, they're still growing things the old-fashioned way, and you can get some of those old-fashioned crops.
That's a good butter bean.
It is a great butter bean.
But anyway, these peace lilies, they don't need to be in the sunshine, do they?
Peace lilies, they don't need a lot of sunshine.
My front porch fruit places do now south.
That's fine, and that'll protect it. That'll protect it in summer when it needs to be protected, but it'll get plenty of side light from the east and the west.
I appreciate you, Bill Berg.
All right, Gene, thank you.
We fired our guns and the British kept a-coming. There wasn't as many as there was a while ago. We fired once more and they began to run it on down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico. On down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico.
Welcome back to Plain Living for Alabama and the Gulf Coast. Questions on conservation, natural history, and gardening? Talk with Bill Finch. Call 251-343-0106 on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, B-Dark, I gotta figure out this pepper. It's curious. It's growing straight up, which is not typical for a lot of common peppers. So anyway, we need to figure out what that is. And got a lot of texts here we're going to get to. A lot of business going on this morning. But Keith sent me a picture earlier. And Keith, tell me what's going on.
Hey, Bill, good morning.
Good morning.
Usually
I just get a I get a lot of texts from Keith, by the way. Everybody should know that I get a lot of texts. It's rare that I actually get to talk to Keith. So I'm glad you called.
Well, last weekend the lady said you'd like to put voice to a face, so now you got it.
That's right. That's right. That's
my
right.
New friend,
good to hear from you.
My new friend is Gene, the last caller.
That's right. Gene's a great guy. Gene's got a great voice, doesn't he?
I got an issue.
Yes, sir.
What is that? I brought in a truckload of pine bark. I'm not going to mention no names, but is that Kogan I'm trying to kill? Because I done throwed out the blue tarp on it. I'm going to burn it. I mean, we need to eradicate that.
Yes. So I'm looking at it, and I think you've got a lot of Kogan. You can look at the blade. You can look at the blade, and it's everywhere right now. And it may have already been in your yard.
It was.
It was not.
Correct.
Yeah. Well, it may have come from that soil.
It's dirty.
Was it dirty? So, or they're, what they were doing was dirty, is what you're saying. So here's what I would say. Kogan needs plenty of sunlight. So you're making it work okay, but you've also got Kogan that's now spread into the surrounding yard.
I'm going to take the fence down next week.
Take the fence down. Mow that Kogan as tight as you can mow it. In fact, mow that whole area around your bed. If you think it's localized there already, keep it there. You can go ahead and cut it. Cut it the first time. If you want to use Roundup on it, you can.
I did a couple of years ago, but I was down for a couple of years and it got out of hand.
I see. Yeah, so just keep that area mowed tight. If it's localized there, keep it mowed tight. Kogan hates to be mowed low. And you might end up with Bermuda grass instead, but it's marginally better than Kogan. But just keep it really tightly mowed around that garden space. And if you can, it's just, that's the problem with trying to tarp Bermuda grass or Kogan grass, is that unless you could tarp a really large area, it's always going to come in from the sides. So be sure to mow around it. Be sure to mow around it. But here's another way to quick tell if it's Kogan. C-O-G-O-N, folks. Kogan grass. You can give it any name you want, but people got to understand what you're talking about, and so we have to kind of explain. Yep. It's an invasive grass that's come in from, well, nobody really knows where it's from originally.
It comes from
oh, that's right. So it may be Malaysia, and we it was introduced into the Port of Mobile, and then Soil Conservation Service decided, oh, wow, this grows really well. Let's try it as a forage, and they encouraged everybody to plant it around, and it got to be a huge issue. And it's a catastrophe. I mean,
correct.
It is a genuine catastrophe. It is really hard to do anything around Kogan, but we all have to live with it now. It's virtually everywhere. It's sort of like Bermuda grass and some other things. But
the last time you never, go ahead, Bill.
Yeah, but just keep that shade on it. Keep but keep it mowed down because you know it's going to be in that surrounding yard by now. And those rhizomes are out there, and but it does not like to be mowed tight.
When last time you heard the name Tax Man?
Boy, I miss him, don't you?
Amen.
He was.
Have a nice day, Bill. I thank you.
Yeah. All right. Great to hear from you, Keith. Keith in Agricola. You know, Keith. You know, that's a Agricola. That suggests you ought to know something about farming. Keith certainly cares about it. Is a great listener and a great to hear from him. Great to hear
thank
from
you.
Him. Yeah. Joel, we lost Joel. Did we? I'm trying to perceive if I can tell. Joel Summerdale, Satsuma trees, new growth, eating worms, pesticide. I'm not sure. Which there aren't really any worms that are going to do a lot of danger that are going to endanger Satsumas. And Joel, you can call me back. We can talk about them. There are a lot of caterpillars from the giant swallowtail there is a caterpillar from the giant swallowtail that will eat the new growth of citrus, but not extensively, and only if you had a really little bitty baby tree would it cause any damage. And the caterpillars are really kind of cool. You're going to have lots of problems on your citrus, but caterpillars are going to be the least of your problems. And then if you kill all those caterpillars, you don't get to see the big orange dog butterflies, the giant swallowtail butterflies, which are really cool to see flying around your garden. And you don't get to play with the caterpillars. So the caterpillar from the giant swallowtail is really fun to just... Well, you don't want to play with them too much. You don't want to be cruel, I guess. But, you know, if you just kind of prod him just a little bit with your finger and make him stick out his horns, it's going to spook you, and then smell those horns. Oh, they're really interesting. It's all a really interesting thing, those caterpillars. But, Joel, you can call me back. We can talk more about it. We're about to run out of time, so, Tony, I'm going to postpone your question about tomatoes until after we get back. Sean, I'm going to deal with your chili pepper questions, and we're going to sort through a few other things. Let's see. We worked together here. Doug Johnson, yeah. Good to hear from you, Doug. Thanks for letting me know that. We'll be back here. And Perry, we're going to talk about persimmons, too.
Time for Plain Living for Alabama and the Gulf Coast with nationally recognized nature writer and award-winning horticulture and nature expert, Bill Finch. Bill shares his knowledge of conservation, natural history, and gardening. Let's talk about living and growing in the Deep South with your personal garden and nature consultant. Here's Bill Finch on FM Talk 106.5.
All right. Welcome back, Gulf Coast Sunday morning, Alabama Sunday morning. We have been talking about, this place called the New World. You call it America, some of you. Which is a weird name. And it says something about how we view this place, because the very name America comes from a guy from Italy who probably, who never, almost certainly never visited this country, but who may have had some designs on visiting Brazil, but it's not clear he even got to Brazil. Americo de Vespucci. Why would we see that as a source of pride, that name? It's weird. But in this new world, which we invaded, 25,000, 30,000 years ago as people, and about that time we came to Alabama, probably sometime between 15 and 25,000 years ago, we were beginning to explore this place we now call Alabama. And then we had thousands and thousands of years to sort of learn about it and how to adjust to it. And we did some really phenomenal things, and we did some really stupid things because, you know, we're people. And people are always wasteful, and people are always all of us. All of us. And we're always all of us fraudulent. And we're all of us at some point in our lives abusive of other people. That's the way we are. But we did some really good things too, and we forgot all those things, and that's one of the dumbest things we did, was to forget about this world that was here before Columbus came. And so it's time to re-begin to re-explore that. And I've been thinking about that because of a couple of articles that we had. And I think about that when I'm giving you garden advice all the time, because a lot of the things we're having to rediscover were actually normal things in this new world that had become the old world after thousands and thousands of years of people living here. And it would be fun to get back and explore some of those things. Melaton is one of those things. David Hubble, who's been on vacation, who found them growing in Epcot, which is a good thing. But there's a lot of others. And we talked about the peppers. I want to talk about starting those peppers now. If you're growing these South American peppers, these Central American peppers, which I think do very, very well for us, they are much less susceptible to disease. They almost never get, it's amazing. I'll have all sorts of problems with the typical annuums and all of the Italian peppers and Italian-like peppers and bell peppers, and I'll have leaf spot, and I'll have spots on the pepper, and the pepper gets weak, and it doesn't deal with every... And these South American and Central American peppers just keep cooking. I'm sure not everyone does, but most of them seem to love the humidity. And they're very tolerant of it, and they're very tolerant of hot nights, which is really great, and they keep producing. And they're perennial. And that means they're a little slower to get started fruiting. But that's okay, because we have a very long growing season. That's why you don't hear about them in Boston. And I know you think we act as if Boston is the center of gardening advice, because we try to garden as if we live in Boston, and we know more about growing things in Boston than we do about growing things in Alabama, which is crazy. But they don't grow that well here, but they grow well there, but they grow well here. And so this is why I recommend them. I think you should think about them. The peppers and the Baccata group. Generally, if you see a name, AJI, associated with a pepper, you can think, I bet that has some opportunities for us. Could be one or two peppers. It could be a Chinitzi pepper, which is in the habanero group. Or it could be a Baccata, which is in a group of peppers that you don't even have names for. Except for ajis. But they don't have to be hot. There's so many different kinds. And there's so many different varieties. They do all tend to be more flavorful, more fruity, more flowery, spicy in the sense of not so much hot, but a sort of pungent, in your nose sort of quality to them. That's very interesting and very good to cook with. A lot of delight to cook with. Really like them. And so we're talking about those today. If you're starting them, start them now. Start them in a pot. You can take them over winter if you want to, and then plant them out next spring. It's a great thing. You'll still get peppers this year, but it'll be late in the year. But if you start them now, get them going. It's easy to start them this time of year. They like a lot of heat to get started. Easy to get them started. Get them up. Get them growing. Keep them going over the winter in a bright windowsill. Plant them out next year. And you know what you may find? They may come back for several winters. I've had macadams that would come back. I've had macadams come back over 8 years. Incredible in Mobile. It's not going to happen in North Alabama so much, but it does happen. It does happen in South Alabama along the coast that they just keep coming back. And that's even without protection. That's even with me ignoring them. A little bit of protection. You could probably keep those peppers going indefinitely, year after year. Great thing to do. So one of the other things that we're doing this time of year, and let me get into this because Tony's going to be mad at me if I don't answer this question, is taking cuttings on tomatoes. And Tony in Fowl River sent me some great pictures of his tomatoes and his sunflowers. But your tomatoes look perfect for taking cuttings. And really what you want to do is take about the top 6 to 8 inches. You don't need a lot of it. Pluck off those maybe 10 inches you could do, but not too much. 6 to 8 inches. Take off the bottom 2 or 3 leaves on that cutting. The bottom set, at least. You don't need a lot of leaves on top. You can, as you're taking those bottom leaves off, you can kind of strip them down the stem, just like pulling a little thread that pulls that down the stem. That'll scar the stem. And that sometimes makes it more likely that that tomato will root. And then what you do is you put it in good potting soil, firm it in. Leave about, leave a couple inches below ground, 3 inches if possible. Do that with several cuttings from the tips. And initially put it in a place where you can keep it moist and shady so that it doesn't dry out too easily. And after about 3 or 4 weeks, you can begin to move it in the sun. And by that time, it'll probably have roots. It's that easy. Now, here's another way of doing it. You can lay the stem down. It's a little more dangerous to do it this way, but it works. You can take one of those tomatoes branches that have gotten, spread way out from the plant and that's close to the ground. You can take that and you can take the tip and you can just bury it a little bit in some good soil right there in the garden. And then cut it off from the mother plant. Does that make sense, Tony?
FM Talk 106.5, home for plain living for Alabama and the Gulf Coast. Let's talk about living and growing in the Deep South with Bill Finch. Call 251-343-0106.
All right, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning. It's an Alabama Sunday morning. Good, Tony. I'm glad you got it. You know, I visualize these things when I'm giving advice, and I don't know if it quite translates, but just take put them in some little containers, put each one in a separate container, or you can bend it down. You can put it in the soil. I actually think I like putting it in a container and starting cuttings in the container fresh. I do think that because we are coming into this season when it's kind of trickier for these plants outside, and keeping them in a container makes it easier to deal with them, keep them going through July, get them started well. They may need less sunlight. They can get by with less sunlight, and you can. They may get by with less rain. All of those things can be useful. And then plant them out, you know, sometime in later July after they've gotten well established. Good. David Michael. He raises the question about peppers and why would we first have domesticated peppers? And that's a really interesting question. I mean, it may not seem like a lot of volume, but if you were looking at wild peppers and you were a forager, you were picking them like they were picking fruits. It would be like saying, well, gosh, why would we have domesticated strawberries? Why would we have domesticated blackberries? They were small, not much bigger than peppers, really. But they would have been good and tasty and useful. Blueberries, for example. But there were plenty of them. And I think our bodies and our desires recognize that those smaller fruits were actually good for us. When did we turn to those things? Maybe when we shot out all the animals. I don't know. When the animals got harder to find. I don't know. It's an interesting question. But it's like many small fruited things, peppers. We have now developed much bigger fruited peppers, which are also good, which have more substance. So you can eat one pepper and know you've eaten it. Your stomach feels it. You don't have to eat a lot of little peppers. But some of those little bird peppers, which are most like the wild peppers, are still quite good. You know, the other interesting thing about peppers and tomatoes and a lot of other things is that they're red. They tend to be red. And I think this is an accident for the peppers. They didn't mean to do this exactly. That red quality in peppers tends to attract certain types of creatures. And in the case of bird peppers, it attracts birds. And that's probably where the red comes from in tomatoes and peppers, which helps. And birds, because they got wings, help to move things a lot farther than, say, lizards, which also have macy red. But the bird, they were definitely designed for birds. Deer, for example, don't see red at all and probably weren't considered very good at moving some things around. But birds, yes. And as it turns out, humans see red too, much like birds do, and unlike deer, which don't see red. And so we were attracted to them, and then we began probably playing a role in their evolution. The evolution of those peppers, which is one of the things that really interests me now. How much do we see in the forest now is a result of humans actually making selections hundreds or thousands of years ago? And I think it's an important question. Sometimes because we make such a mess now, and we make a mess at such a scale and so completely, we've basically wiped out a lot of evidence of things that humans did hundreds or thousands of years ago. But there are still places like Paint Rock, where I have the research center, where we can still see that because humans haven't done so much in the past 20 years in the usual way that they do things, basically wiping out everything, scraping everything back to bare dirt, bulldozing it. That's not what happened. if people meddled in the forest, they did it incompletely, they did it imperfectly, and so things came back. You ended up with a lot of things persisting. But things like persimmons, I think maybe persimmons actually were selected. We forget that our native persimmons are one of the most delicious fruits out there. They really are incredibly delicious. You have to wait for the right opportunity. We could begin working on it. We could begin thinking about how to develop a native persimmon. We basically let people in Michigan decide, oh, well, this is how native persimmon should be. And so then we go to Michigan. It's just typical of the South. Go to Michigan to find a cultivar of persimmon that we can bring back to the home of persimmons here in the South to grow. What a crazy thing. But our native persimmons are really good. We should be doing more selection. There are some big fruited persimmons out there. There are also some big persimmons trees, as one of my callers just pointed out, and they used to be used for golf clubs. The wood can be quite good. They were used as heads for golf clubs because they were so hard and so unlikely to splinter. So your hardwoods, as they say, isn't that the term they use in golf? I was a terrible golfer. Probably my attitude. But yeah, I think that's the hardwood clubs that were dark. They were often persimmon and may still be to some degree. May still be. Yeah, what is my favorite large pepper? Interesting. And oh boy, there's a lot of them out there. And so from a stuffing perspective, I keep trying to find some good stuffing peppers that actually are dependable. And that's hard to do, I will be frank. But there is one that I have found that is very good, and I use it a lot. It's very hard to find, and it's a Bacatum pepper, Aji Santa Cruz, Aji Santa Cruz. And I think if I look up Aji Santa Cruz, a couple of peppers come up, I should say, and it's hard to find the right place selling it, but I managed to get these Aji Santa Cruz at one time. There we go, HR Seeds. And it looks like Atlantic Pepper Seeds is growing the same one. Tradewinds had it for a while as well. They may still have it. Similis, which is a European company, has it. So they're out there. Aji Santa Cruz. I really like it. It's said to originate from the island of Tenerife. The problem with that, of course, is that it didn't originate there. It originated from South America, which is where Bacatums are from. But they have proven to be very good in my garden and incredibly prolific. Aji Santa Cruz. HR Seeds has them. And it looks like, let's see, we'll see if some of these other places have them as well. So, yeah. That's probably my favorite. We'll come back to some other sources here in just a minute. All right. What varieties of carrots and radishes can you recommend for planting for fall and winter? Will in Fairhope. Yeah, boy, that's... can we talk about failures for a minute? Let's talk about failures when we come back. And we'll talk about successes, too. It's like this question has a little of both.
Because everything gonna finger get down. On your bended knees, I ain't going to. I dig no more taters. I decline, I ain't going to pick no peas. Because everything...
You get Plain Talk on Plain Living. Let's talk about living and growing in the Deep South with Bill Finch. Call 251-343-0106 on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back. Gulf Coast Sunday morning, Alabama Sunday morning. Well, we're thinking about this place. We're thinking about this place, not maybe even as our grandmothers remembered it, or their grandmothers, but as it's been for many, many thousands of years. And right now, I'm only going to go back just a few thousand years. Not very far at all. We're not going back to the dinosaurs. You know, it's almost like I have a timeline. A lot of our Alabama was developing as a place in a big way, oh, I would say about 250, 300 million years ago. That's when the Cumberland Ocean began developing. It's why Birmingham's where it is, under that Cumberland Ocean. Where Birmingham was under a Cumberland Sea. And it laid down all that limestone and helped create the iron industry that's there. So all that was happening that's 200, 300 million years ago. There weren't any dinosaurs then. I think there were turtles. That's interesting. You know, all we do is run over turtles. We don't really appreciate how important turtles are to the world and how really cool they are and how they're much more ancient than dinosaurs. Isn't that interesting? You don't think about that. I mean, dinosaurs kind of a newfangled thing. Turtles around much longer. But then the dinosaurs, and this is hundreds of millions of years ago, and then the dinosaurs kind of got pounded by a meteor that likely crashed somewhere in the Gulf of Mexico or right on the edge of the Gulf of Mexico, which wiped out the dinosaurs, basically, along with maybe some other factors as well, like volcanic activity. There's still a little bit of debate about all that, but it made a big impact, made a big impression, lost the dinosaurs. And that was 80 million years ago, you know, quite a while back. So when I talk about things that happened thousands of years ago, it's pretty recent. Oaks began developing about 30, 40, 50 million years ago. Into the forms that we know now, they really began to diversify. Gives you a sense of that. Pines are much older. But thousands of years we've been here. And we really need to remember what it was like to be here. In this relatively recent span of time, when people came to Alabama, but they really had thousands of years for us is a long time. And they had a sense that they could discover things in this place, a sense that we didn't have. They made some mistakes. They screwed up a lot. There's no question. They're people. They screwed up a lot. And I wish they hadn't. And I wish they hadn't done some of the things they did, because they got rid of my elephants. God, I hate that. I just hate losing the elephants. I'm sorry. It's sad to have lost our elephants here in North America. I think about it all the time. But they did that. They screwed that up. But they did some good things too, and we have a lot to learn from those people who are here and have spent thousands of years learning from their mistakes. It's time for us to learn from our mistakes. I hope we're capable of that. Because if we're not, we're doomed. We're absolutely doomed. So here's my mistakes. So this is, I guess, a prelude to this answer to this question about which carrots, which radishes do I recommend? So I'm going to start out with the failures. I get a few carrots every year. I never really do well with carrots, and something always interferes, and it's not just me. I think the soils have to be just right. I think the soils in Mobile are right. I think you have to do your timing right. I think ants or something else in the soil makes a big difference in terms of eating the, you know, I'll get lots of little carrots come up, and then I lose them all. And honest to goodness, I'm not sure what I'm losing them to. I think sometimes the roots don't get down quickly enough. So here's what I'm going to tell you. I'm not going to pretend that I know a lot about growing carrots because I'm not good at it. I think it's something we should try. I think I've been successful enough to think that we can do it really well, but I'm not smart enough to recommend exact varieties right now. I just don't know. I honestly do not know. I've had some great luck some years with some varieties and in some seasons with some varieties and not in others. I just don't know. I'm not smart enough. I haven't failed enough with carrots, I guess is the point, to give you good advice on which ones to grow. I've only succeeded enough to say, yeah, I think it's worth messing with, and I think we ought to begin to work on it and think about it. Radishes, on the other hand, man, goodness gracious, I can't seem to go wrong with radishes. The only radishes that I think really don't matter to me are the little baby radishes, the little breakfast radishes, and I've done okay, and they're fine, and they grow in 25 days, and then I remember to pick them, or I don't remember to pick them, and then I think, why did I bother? But the fall radishes are what are really good, and it's a little too early for planting fall radishes anywhere in Alabama, but later on in the year, sometime around August in North Alabama, and maybe even late July, but August mostly in North Alabama, and September in South Alabama, early September, you ought to begin planting those radishes. And they are great. And they're fall radishes. And which fall radishes do best? All of them. They all do really well. I have not found any that just were that just didn't do. And it's just a question of which ones you like the flavor on. Some of those Korean radishes, we undervalue Korean vegetables, and I'm beginning to realize this more and more. Koreans have done really wonderful things with vegetables. And some of the Korean radishes are incredible. I like them as well or better than a lot of the Chinese radishes that I've been growing. And I just highly recommend them. Some of them have a really great flavor that's great in salads. Just cut them up. The greens are delicious. But there's so many. Just start experimenting with the fall radishes. There are so many. And again, I will tell you where to go for a great selection of fall radishes is to the Japanese, hold on, I'll think of it in just a minute, but True Leaf Seeds is the larger catalog that has those in there. So if you go to True Leaf Seeds, you're going to find a ton of fall radishes under their umbrella organization, which actually includes a lot of seed houses. But True Leaf Seeds is a great place to go to look for those fall radishes. But look elsewhere. They're really great. And those of you who are really good at figuring out how to grow carrots will let me know. So here's Sean Collins saying, I had success with cosmic purple carrots in West Mobile when I lived there. There you go. So I don't know. I just got a lot to learn where carrots are concerned. Yes, so B Dark says, yes, she was talking about root crops. Peanuts, potatoes, onions, trumps, and add some cornbread. Trumps. Turnips, I bet. so I can see where that might have happened. Turnips, I reckon, and add some cornbread. Yes, great roots. Great roots, all. All right, let's see here. Last year I noticed on some of our oak trees that where we look like a web going up, okay, and notice worms high in the tree. What can I do and prevent and get rid of them? Okay, two things going on here, Tony. So Tony sent me a picture. Get prepared for this, Tony. Tony sent me a picture of a webbing that's on the trunk of his trees. And what you're going to find is that webbing is not at all related to the webbing that's in the leaves of that oak tree. They're two different things. Two very different things. The one on the trunk is what we call bark lice. And they are completely harmless. They're amusing. They're interesting even. Don't worry about them. The ones in the canopy are something else entirely. And they are tent caterpillars. And for tent caterpillars, they can be a little bit of a problem. I wouldn't worry about them in the oaks, honestly. There's a yellow-billed cuckoo out there that's loving eating all those tent caterpillars. I hope you have a yellow-billed cuckoo. They're so neat. They're so wonderful. But there, if you want to get rid of them in a fruit tree, say, or a tree that's important to you, like a pecan that's going to have fruits and you want to maximize the leaves, just take a, it's a very simple technique, take a long strand of bamboo. Find a good long piece of bamboo. And I say bamboo because it's easy to handle. So cut a big piece of bamboo that's tall enough for you to reach up in there. Cut most of the branches off except right at the tip. Leave a little, few little stubs of branches. Poke that pole up into it. Twist it. Pull it down. Boom. You're probably going to get rid of it. You will get rid of it. It's the protection of that tent that makes it good for those caterpillars. Now, the stuff on the bark, don't even worry about it. Not a problem. Sorry, that must have been AI. No, it was subconscious, B-Dark. It was subconscious. But that's okay. Tony, does that make sense? Don't worry about the stuff on the bark. I wouldn't even worry about the stuff in the trees if it's an oak tree. But if it's a precious tree like a persimmon or something like that, and you got it, just use a, or even a pecan, use a pole and put it up there and just twist it and get that tent all wrapped up in there and pull them down. There it is. Rusty, great question about Szechuan peppers, which are in very different things. So can I recommend a good Szechuan pepper? Yes, it's our native Szechuan pepper. Szechuan peppers are not actually chili peppers. They're actually a tree that produces a berry that looks more like black pepper, but that's not even a black pepper. It's actually a citrus relative. And we call it toothache tree here. And it has the same effect as toothache tree. Isn't this, Rusty, you got to call me back next week when we have time. And let's talk about one of our great forgotten plants, toothache trees. This has got a long story, but it's a good one. It's a good one. Rusty, you better call me back next week.
Welcome back to Plain Living for Alabama and the Gulf Coast. Questions on conservation, natural history, and gardening? Talk with Bill Finch. Call 251-343-0106 on FM Talk 1065.
All right, welcome back. Gulf Coast Sunday morning, Alabama Sunday morning. So, Jarhead, trailing here at the end, as usual.
Well, I was eating breakfast and I lost track of time. But what I got right, to tell you won't take but just a minute. I took your advice this year and raised blade up on my lawnmower. I'm up to 6 now. I got 2 more notches to go. The lawn looks great. I'm seeing less weeds and a more lush lawn, and it's looking great.
How did you get it up to 6 inches? This is great. So this is what people are going to want to know. So your mower goes that high, does it?
Well, it's got 8 notches on it. I'm guessing they're half-inch increments. But I started out, you know, this year, first of spring, cutting it low, and I've just been moving it up a little bit ever since.
It makes a ton of difference. It's probably not 6 inches. That would be really hard. What kind of mower is it?
It's a Craftsman Zero Turn.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
I'm guessing the 6-inch mark is probably 3 to 4-inch grass, so.
Right. So come on up. Yeah, so that's, yeah, come on up to about 8. And it's amazing how much difference it makes. Yeah, if you're cutting much below 3 inches, it can really be hard on that lawn. But I think it'll make a big difference. Now, there's nothing foolproof where lawns are concerned, but that is probably the biggest difference you can make is just mowing higher.
Well, you had asked me to report back to you on mulching around a wisteria last year, and I did it. I did it with pine straw. It has cut down on the runners. I'm not seeing any runners or any shoots coming up around the plant. It seems to have contained the plant into one bush. So I just wanted to report back on that.
Are you mowing around that too?
I do around the outside of the mulch. I don't mow up under it. I just leave the mulch there, and it's worked great.
Yeah, and I think you're probably getting most of the sprouts with the mowing. Do you know where this wisteria came from? Let me ask you this. Here's another question. Does this wisteria bloom after the leaves have developed or before the leaves have developed?
It's kind of iffy, to tell the truth. It kind of like blooms when it wants to.
Yeah, that's right. Well, that's typical.
It's been there for... probably longer than I've been here, so it was there when I got here. So
it's an Asian wisteria, but it's that's interesting, and that's, you know, that's teaching me something, which is to suggest that most of the sprouts on these wisterias, and I think I see that with most of the ones that I have, don't come from right near the trunk, but from outside the trunk. So people who mow a wide area around that wisteria are probably getting rid of most of the sprouts.
Well, actually, I'm not seeing any runners either. They're, you know, the vines that run off the bottom, and even when I was mowing around it, it's gotten rid of those too. So,
yeah, that's right. And so it's that's right. So it usually sprouts from the roots that are runners that spread out from the plant, and I think your mowing has probably solved that, and the fact that it is not coming up even around the plant itself means that it doesn't sprout a lot around the base. But those would be easy to catch, wouldn't they? Because even if it did, you could easily prune them off.
Yeah.
So good.
Well, I'll try to call back in earlier next week. I'll try to eat breakfast earlier next week.
All right, Chariot. Good. Thank you.
Have a good day, Bill.
All right, you too. All right, Don, I got a lot to cover with you. I could see, and I probably didn't do it, but I'll go up to the first question. I'm glad, since you're talking about peppers, what sun is better, morning sun or afternoon, 6 to 3 in the morning or 3 to 6 afternoon? So here's what I would say with peppers. You want to give them as much sunlight as possible. Don't stand on that. I will say that bell pepper, it's going to vary depending on peppers, your success. Bell peppers are going to have a real hard time, but I don't think limiting sunlight is the way to go with any of the peppers. Even though technically the bell peppers might like a little bit of shade in the middle of the day, I just don't think that's the way to go. I think you want as much sun as possible. Any time of day you can get it with peppers. They really like a lot of sunlight. So don't, to say which is best, I couldn't tell you. If there was any sunlight I would think I could afford to lose, it would be sunlight between 11 and 1, 11 and 2 during the day. That's probably the sunlight that you could most afford to lose if you had full sunlight otherwise. you'd be great. And that's true for most plants. Probably the ideal shade in a southern climate is shade that only shades from 11 until 1, which is, if you think about it, a little difficult to pull off, but it's not impossible. Not impossible. That's one of the reasons why gardens in a place with very old, mature, tall pines, for example, can be a very good garden, because those old mature pines are only shading the garden at midday and not during morning and evening. It's very good to do. You can grow, one of the reasons you could grow citrus too under those pines. They would protect the tree during winter because they would tend to hold in the heat, which is what people used to try along the Gulf Coast. Yes, sir. So lots of things for us to think about. Lots of things for us to work on about where we are. And what message am I going to leave you? You want to make America great again? Understand that this place, this land, has had people for 20,000 years. And understand that there were a lot of failures and successes over that time. And understand that we've forgotten most of them. Both. And we need to learn about that. We need to do everything we can to learn about that. Then I think we might actually, finally, make this a great place again for gardening. Make this a great place again for nature, for our own lives and livelihoods. Understanding where we are. Understanding that it's not just what was here when we were here and what was here when our grandparents were here, because we had already lost a lot by that time. We had lost a ton of knowledge. We had lost a ton of plants. Learning from the past, learning from our own failures, keeping a record of those failures, ooh, that's really important. Keeping a record of those successes, because we've made some mistakes, all of us. We've made some mistakes as a country. We've made some mistakes as people over the long haul. But we've had some great successes, too. Seeing them both, understanding them both. Great articles in New York Times this week. Read them about avocados, about ancient gardening in North America.